Welcome to Words to Mouth Quick and Wordy, a series of short conversations with authors about their lives and books. And today, I'm excited to introduce you to Ron Franzel, author of The Darkest Night. Welcome, Ron.
Thank you for having me, Gary.
You're welcome. Let's start out by hearing a little bit about you and then what inspired you to write The Darkest Night.
Well, I grew up in a small town in Wyoming. I somehow avoided the usual fate of becoming an oil field roughneck or a refinery hand. Instead, I became a newspaper man. And actually, after working at newspapers in Santa Fe and in California's Bay Area, I came back to Wyoming in the 1980s to run my own small daily paper and to raise my kids. At that time, I wrote my first book. It was a novel called Angel Fire. It was about 12 years ago. Very quickly after that, I published another novel, a mystery, actually, in this case, different from Angel Fire in almost every way, and it's called The Deadline. And then now is The Darkest Night, which is a true story about this monstrous crime against two childhood friends that continues to haunt the town where I grew up. Now I live in Texas, and I work for Hearst Newspaper, and I'm writing my next book. But it was really that Wyoming experience, and particularly my Wyoming childhood, that underlies this story. The story that of what happened to my friends at Fremont Canyon Bridge in 1973 has haunted me since I was 16 years old. And it was really a rite of passage for me. It was the moment when I realized the world was a lot more dangerous than I had ever known. And evil lived just around the corner, literally. Everybody comes to that realization sooner or later, I think. But for me, it was 1973.
Yeah, that's a little too young. Tell us a little bit about The Darkest Night.
Well, on a chilly autumn night in 1973, my next-door neighbors, my friends, 18-year-old Becky Thompson and her 11-year-old sister Amy were abducted at a neighborhood market by a couple of local hoods. That, for those girls, begins this night of terror in which they're tortured physically and mentally by these two guys. Eventually, these guys take them to a remote bridge over a deep, dark canyon 40 miles from town. Almost upon arriving, they throw Amy off the bridge, 12 stories down into this. This is the middle of the night. There's this black river down below. Then the two guys turn to the rape of her older sister, Becky. And when they're done, they throw her off the bridge, too. Miraculously, though, Becky survives. And despite her injuries, which included a broken pelvis, and despite the night being freezing, and she's half naked, she might as well be naked. She's got a broken pelvis. She's been thrown into a cold river. She suspects that her little sister is down there and probably dead. But she can't see her hand in front of her face. It's so black down there. She survives that night and literally drags herself up this canyon wall the next morning and is rescued. She's able to identify the killers and the rapists, of course, and they're quickly arrested. They're well known to the cops in this town. Ultimately, they're convicted and sentenced to die, but because America had a certain ambivalence about the death penalty in the mid-1970s, and it was caught up in something even bigger than they were, this sort of national debate about capital punishment. They were ultimately commuted to life sentences. That particular act throws Becky, the survivor who really hadn't recovered emotionally from this crime yet, into a tailspin. She has a series of low-paying jobs, a brief marriage that left her as a single mother, drug and alcohol abuse that she just simply couldn't overcome, and probably an understandable inability to make a truly intimate connection with a man. Becky goes back to that bridge 19 years after the crime, and I will say only that there's a tragic epiphany at that point. So at its heart, I think The Darkest Night, which was fall in hardcover, the paperback publisher changed the name of the book simply to appeal more to the what they called the typical true crime reader. I protested that, but I had no leverage. Mm-hmm. But Darkest Night is a story about one woman's search for equilibrium, I think. She just wants to feel solid ground beneath her. I don't think she ever really found the answers for herself, but her search and the story of her search might leave some of us, some of your readers, to their own answers.
And that's why you wrote the book.
Yeah, I think I wrote it because I was haunted by it first. I mean, this stuck with me, as I've said earlier. I was dispatched shortly after 9/11 to cover the Middle East by the Denver Post, and my job was to simply walk around, wander around the Middle East, and ask questions that a lot of people were asking in those troubled days. You know, why us? What did we do? And try to understand what had happened. I'm not sure I did that satisfactorily. I don't think I answered all those questions because we're still asking them. But it was on my way back that you know, I saw photographs for the very first time of people leaping from the World Trade Center, and in one of the photographs, I saw people holding hands as they fell to their death. And I, for some reason, my brain just flashed back to this event that was so seminal in my life, and I felt that there was a connection, and what was a small event in a small town in a place that few people care about really probably had some more universal application.
That's interesting. So it was sort of cathartic for you to write this book. How did you get all the detail, and how did you do the research on the book?
Well, it was a lot of traveling back there and spending a lot of time there. I took a year off from my job at the Denver Post to be able to do that, and I spent a lot of time there talking to people, going through records, digging up people who understandably didn't want to be connected in any way to these killers.
Right.
I think that for me personally, the most difficult part of this whole book was my series of interviews with one of those two killers, a guy named Ron Kennedy. In almost every other aspect of my research, I was really protected by this emotional distance that a newspaper man learns. But these interviews were a bigger challenge of my love for journalism than I really expected. He was the most important piece of this story to me because he was my mirror. He was also the only one of the four people on the bridge that night who was still alive. But ultimately, I think he was going to tell me something about me. Messengers have played this vital role in humankind since we started. I wanted to know if my feelings about this guy, or really what he represented and he did, were stronger than my passion to be a good messenger. If I couldn't step back from my feelings to allow him to tell his own story in his own voice, then I wouldn't be the newspaper man I thought I was. And this rapist killer would have robbed me of that, too. And I just didn't want that to happen, but I wanted to know if I could take that crucial step away from my feelings and tell his story.
And you did. You know, I was just
I hope so.
You did, and I was going to ask you, you know, what you learned about yourself while writing this book, and you answered my question before I even asked the question.
Well, there's that. I mean, you know, ultimately, I don't think he led me to this conclusion, but I think that this book crystallized for me this notion that evil surrounds us like bad air.
Right.
And it always has. We have no choice in it. We can only choose how we respond to it. We can hide from it. And we can try to fool ourselves that there are safe places in the world, or we can live. And I think we can't give up this fight for justice in the world, but I think we must live as if tomorrow's not going to come. I think that's the lesson I get from Becky, because tomorrow did come for her. And for the next 19 years of tomorrows, she didn't get past that. And in a way, her tragedy is a gift to us. And so, you know, I think it's the old saying that, you know, some people are so afraid of dying that they never start to live. And I think we have to take that to heart. Fear isn't always a horror either. I when I was wandering around the Middle East, every single moment, even when I was asleep, I was extremely aware of my surroundings. My senses were on their highest alert for any possible threat. I would notice shadows of people walking past a hotel door or a tent, you know. I was never accosted in any way. If I was in danger, I was never aware of it, but I was on alert. And as a result, there's this sort of alchemy that apprehension brings. And so every color was brighter, and every taste was richer, and every smell was more aromatic, and every sound was more melodic. And my senses were never more powerfully aroused. I don't recommend people put themselves in danger just to experience those things. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
But we can't hide out. You know, my life in journalism and this whole experience together convinced me that there's no genuinely safe place for us out there. That hasn't made me fearful about living life. It's merely made me understand how important it is to live.
Well, Ron has been nice enough to offer two copies of The Darkest Night, so be sure to go to wordstomouth.com to enter your name in the drawing to win. Ron, what's next for you? You said you're working on another book?
Yes, and true to my habit, it has nothing to do or looks nothing like any of the three books I've written before.
Yeah, you're dabbling in all different genres.
Well, like I say, I'm a storyteller, and yeah. I do the stories that appeal to me, and this particular story is a true story again, but it's about a road trip, an extraordinary road trip that my son and I took to the Arctic last summer, and it was about taking some low-level risks together. It was about a father and a son bonding. It was about drinking a cocktail that contained a mummified human toe.
Oh, my gosh.
but it was also about spending the longest day of the year in a place where the sun wouldn't set. Mm. And the whole, for a writer, I think the metaphor of a day without darkness, just a father and a son, is very powerful. And indeed, the reality was that it was a magical moment for us. And so this book's going to be about fathers and sons. It's going to be about the ties that bind and the ties that we sometimes work hard to break and can't, and sometimes don't work hard enough to make them stay. So,
it sounds wonderful. When do you think that will be out?
I don't know. It's not sold yet. If you have any publishers out there who'd be like to take a look at it, we can certainly arrange that. But right now, it's not sold. It's in the process of being written.
And did you take some more time off? Or are you writing that as you work?
I'm writing that as I work. I work for Hearst Newspapers in Texas.
Okay. So that's a challenge.
It's a challenge, but you know, it's also, I think most of your writers out there will understand this, and readers should understand this, that storytellers are just compelled to tell stories. Mm-hmm. And even though you might work 8 hours a day, you're going to come home and continue to tell those stories. You just need to get it out.
Right. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
I would like to encourage your readers to keep reading. And if they ever entertain any thought of becoming a storyteller themselves, they will have prepared themselves the best they could by reading. And a story comes, I think all stories in many ways are related. And so, keep reading.
Let me ask you real quick, what are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? Right now, I'm reading a brand new book called A Deeper Blue by Robert Hardy. And it's a biography of a Texas, I don't know if he's famous beyond Texas, but a guy named Townes Van Zandt, folk singer and songwriter who probably never achieved the fame that he should have, and a horribly tragic story.
Oh, do we recommend it?
So far, yes, I would.
Okay. Okay. How can readers get in touch with you, Ron?
Well, I have a website, ronfrancel.com, and there's an email there. That's probably the easiest.
Okay. Well, the book is The Darkest Night, and Ron, I thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Terry.
I appreciate you. You're very interesting.
Oh, thank you.
Definitely
you're
a good storyteller. You're welcome. And everyone can go to wordstomouth.com for more information about Ron Franzell's books, and I'll put the link to his website there. And definitely enter to win a free copy of The Darkest Night. Call 206-309-7318 to leave a comment or suggestion, and make sure you check back often for more Words to Mouth, quick and wordy interviews, or better yet, subscribe at iTunes. Take good care. Until next time. You've been thinking about